Billy DeVay's 1025 1063, the game in the Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. We're out here at Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena, and the namesake himself is out here, Pete Weber, everybody, on the last day of school. Willie Donick also joins the party. Willie, how are we doing?
Doing all right. It's a little bit bittersweet, the last day of school, because, you know it's the last day of school.
Uh-huh.
We're getting used to this around here, right? You make the playoffs every year. This is 8 straight years that's been snapped. You never know when your last game's going to be going into the game, right? It just ends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even going to the – if you're behind and you're facing elimination, may not be the last day of school. Just win, you stay alive.
Hey.
But today we know it's the last day of school.
This is it.
So we want to have a one last hurrah here against the defending champions. And it's an interesting game. Only because Colorado is in a difficult dilemma. They played last night. They have to fly from Denver here. I mean, I'm sure they're here, but they had to fly through the night.
Mm-hmm.
And they have something to play for, because if they win, they win the division. They get more home ice advantage. They would be the 2 overall seed in the West as opposed to the number 2 seed in the Central.
Mm-hmm.
So they would play Minnesota in the first round if they lose tonight. If they win, they would get the Seattle Kraken, which is a little bit different, I would think.
Right.
So how bad do you try to go get this game? They're already pretty banged up. They don't have Cale Makar. They don't have Gabe Landeskog. They won't have Gabe Landeskog. So it's an interesting dilemma for a coach. Like, how bad would you try to go get this game?
Right.
Or would you say, hey, you know, if we win, great, but I'm not going to risk X. So we'll see.
It'll be interesting. Puck drop at 7 o'clock tonight at Bridgestone Arena. And joining us now is Jeffrey Simmons agent Paul Duracell. Paul, I know it's been a whirlwind of a week for you, hopefully in the best way possible, but we really appreciate you joining us. First question I have for you is, going into this deal, going into all the negotiations, what were Jeffrey Simmons' priorities in this contract?
Well, first of all, good afternoon. How you doing? Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on.
Thanks
we appreciate
for coming
it.
On.
Yeah, appreciate you.
No doubt. I would say for Jeff, man, going into it, his number one priority was he wanted to just be paid in line with his value. And he wanted to know that the organization really respected him and valued his contributions and, you know, him playing hurt and doing everything right. So he didn't have just a set number beating anybody. I think his number one priority was getting a contract that was guaranteed. That it had high guaranteed money, flexibility on the length of the contract, and just something that would be respectable at his position. We focus on us in the entirety of the deal, with not really trying to worry about beating anybody else. Just what was important to us.
Now, Paul, looking at Jeffrey's contract, and we've talked about it for the last couple of days, and congratulations to you for negotiating that contract, and congratulations to Jeff because he earned every bid and possibly even more. But we were discussing a contract, and we were all trying to figure out, well, what will it be? What will it entail? How much? And we were thinking we're not so much worried about the AAV than we are the guaranteed money. Is that what you and Jeffrey were more concerned with outside of being in Nashville for his whole career, more so the guaranteed than the AAV?
Absolutely. You know, Jeffrey and I have a very close relationship. I care about him. So I feel like sometimes AAV is more of an agent number,
mm-hmm.
you know, that you use as a recruitment tool. You know, sometimes you hear guys, oh, I got 42 guaranteed. Then it's a backloaded contract, dummy years, void years, and the player never sees that. So it was big for us to have real tangible money. And the AAV is a great number. I still feel like we have a good number. But it was always about the guarantee, 3-year cash flow, signing bonus, those metrics. You know, I wanted real money. It wasn't about me. It was all about Jeff.
Now, was there any worry that a deal might not get done this year, considering what happened, you know, because the Titans were sort of in the same situation with A.J. Brown a year prior, and we all thought, hey, A.J. is going to be back, and I know they wanted him back. But then at the 12th hour, they end up trading him away, and he ends up getting a contract with Philadelphia. Now, we didn't think that Jeffrey was going to go anywhere, but there were a lot of fans just around here like, man, they're not going to sign Jeff back because the Titans don't pay anyone, which is not true. They do pay, and they do prioritize positions, and I think Jeffrey was one of their, if not their main priority this offseason?
I don't think there was any word. You know, we went into it knowing that A.J. Brown was an entirely different situation with an entirely different general manager. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Rand Carthon came in, man. If he was hired on a Tuesday, I think I see a 6, 7, 8 number or whatever. His number starts with, he called me by Wednesday. The dialogue started very early, you know, more so just from congratulating each other. You know, I was proud of him just as a black man. You know, that was the first part of the conversation. And obviously, you know, we got into the nuances. And, you know, he said he wanted to pay Jeff. And, you know, he had sent an offer by the Pro Bowl. We got our first offer from the Titans at the Pro Bowl, I believe on the Friday or the Saturday of the Pro Bowl. So we knew that, and he came in at a number that was, I would say, respectable. You know, sometimes these organizations will send you a terrible number. It wasn't disrespectful. You know, when we got that offer, we knew there was work to do, but we knew that getting to the number that we wanted was tangible. And Rand was true to his word.
Talking to Paul Duracell. He is the agent for Jeffrey Simmons. And, Paul, excuse us. We're downtown here. We got sirens and stuff going up and down the Mumbrian here right by the arena. But I'm curious, your relationship, you mentioned you've known Jeffrey for a long time. We have really enjoyed his personality, the way he wants to win, the way he's been a professional since he's been here at Nashville. When did you first meet Jeffrey?
It's crazy. I actually first met Jeffrey at the Pro Bowl when he was, after his rookie year, he was with Jarrell Casey. And I just kept seeing him over and over. I was playing ping pong, just beating everybody, man. And I was beating him. And I saw he had a wristband on. It was Omega Psi Phi. And I'm a part of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. So we talked a little bit about that, but it was never on, you know, I want to represent you one day. And obviously, I did my research, looked up. I saw he didn't have an agent at the time. You know, he went that route of no agent. And, you know, doing further research, I saw that his uncle was Jason Hatcher. He played in the NFL. You know, I didn't think anything of it at the time. I was representing DJ Chark. But a couple years later, I saw Hatch at a crab boil, and we just started talking and just built a genuine, organic relationship. He introduced me to Jeff and also Tyree Phillips, and we just fostered a friendship. It was never a promise that I would ever be his agent. I was just around, you know, and building that trust, building that rapport. And I actually had to interview like anybody else did for the position, and I would like to think I knocked it out the park, and that's why I'm here talking to y'all today.
You know, it's interesting to hear you talk about your sort of vision of how you approach being an agent. It's obvious that the relationship is important to you. You know, we've all seen Jerry Maguire and movies like that, but, you know, there's different relationships, right, between agents and players. So I'm curious, where did you develop sort of your belief on what an agent should be to a player?
I've always looked at it, man. Whether a person was a football player, a fellow law student, a younger fraternity brother, I've always treated people how I would want to be treated if I were in that position. And I'm big on personal relationships because I believe at the end of the day, when it gets dark and when it gets hard, those personal relationships are going to give you sustenance through a difficult time. You know, contract negotiations are hard. So I feel like you can't really know the player until you know the person, so you know their temperament, so you know their priorities, so you know their values. So I try to be a big brother as an agent, be a mentor, be a therapist, be a pastor, sending you know, scripture in the morning. You know, an agent's going to wear many hats, and I just try my best to foster those really, really personal relationships, not only with the player, but with their family, with everybody, because that's what it's about for me. I don't care if I have 20 clients. If I have 10 quality guys, that's better than 50 guys I got to worry about losing anytime things get hard.
So as the big brother, did you take it easy on him at the ping pong table, or did you say, look, I'm the big brother, I got to teach you how to get better here? Did you school him?
I have not lost the ping pong game yet. Tyree's been practicing a little bit, but I don't think I'll lose. I didn't beat him right-handed, left-handed. You know,
don't know. We're talking with Paul Duracell, Jeffrey Simmons' agent. They just negotiated a $94 million four-year extension for Jeffrey Simmons. Now, I listened to Jeff on press conference, and it tugs at everybody's heartstrings because I think a lot of players can relate to Jeffrey's story and his upbringing and his mom and his family being there for him no matter what. I think a lot of players can can attest to that. But I also listened to the things that Jeffrey said he was doing down in Mississippi, all of the work outside of football with the community stuff. Was that big for you in getting a client that not only does he do what he needs to do on a football field, but also that he gives back to the community that he grew up in and the community that he's playing in?
That is absolutely important. Jeff Hart, man, how much he loves people and looks out for people, and he's always so selfless. And that resonates, man. That resonates, and it also translates to the football field. He loves his teammates. Y'all saw him crying after the Jag game. When he loves you and he's with you, you know, he grew up in Nashville County under unfortunate circumstances, you know. He kind of talked about sharing a bed with his brother, living with his family, all that. So, you know, when he started giving him a reason, he started that because he wanted to use his position to help others. You know, they had a big Christmas giveaway, and they're doing all these big things, man. And it couldn't happen to a better human being, man. Mm-hmm. Now, none of this that is happening. He's going to be one of those guys that's going to give back. He's got plans for tennis camps, business, the things that they're about to do with this foundation, man. It is going to be truly, truly sensational. And he means it, too. Mm-hmm. This is something that's really important to him.
Jeffrey Simmons' agent, Paul Duracell, is with us. Paul, what was your experience like working with Rand Carthon, negotiating with Rand Carthon, your impression of him as a person and as a GM?
I love Rand. You know, there's a quote about Rand that says he's everybody's best friend. And immediately in meeting Rand and interacting, you could see why he was the guy at San Francisco. Anytime things got tough, they sent him to go talk to Debo. Mm-hmm. He has this calming presence. He's firm, he's fair, he's a consummate professional. You know, he and I didn't always get along about certain things, but I think we left the process as friends. He knows his stuff, he knows football, and the crazy thing about it, man, is a lot of people don't know this, but we really moved the deal along by going to church, Mount Zion, Sunday morning, which is right by the facility. So right after church, Rand and I got to, you know, he pulled out the deal on the screen, on the big screen, and I think that's when we made significant movement in the deal. And I look forward to working with him again, because I'm going to see him again in a couple of years. I hope that a four-year extension was very intentional. We'll see Rand again when it's time to get to that new stadium.
And Paul, that's what we talked about as far as the length of the deal. That, you know, Jeffrey will be just turning 30 or will be 30 at the end of this deal, but it gives him the flexibility, which, you know, you've talked about the flexibility of going back to the table because you know what type of player Jeffrey Simmons is and you know what he will ultimately become. So going back to the table is nothing to you. It's like, listen, we're going to sign this short-term deal. It's great for both parties, but knowing that Jeff is going to be back at the table in another 3 to 4 years.
Absolutely. And if you look at historically what the Titans have done, you know, as an agent, you got to do your homework. You know, if you look historically at what the Titans have done, they've done 5-year extensions. You know, Landry, the Taylor Lewan is the more appropriate comparison. You know, he had 5 for 80, but he did a 5-year extension with the 5th-year option. So we really, really wanted to get to a 4-year. You know, me personally, I wanted 3 years, but Rand told me, hell nah. I'm thinking I'm coming in. I'm like, you know, maybe I go 3 years, $68 million fully guaranteed, and with a basketball deal, Rand was like, hell nah. So, the first couple of offers were 5-year extensions. I can, you know, y'all my cousins now, so I can tell y'all that. But I was adamant. And you look at Javon Hargrave, just got paid 4 years, $84 million at 30. Chris Jones is 29. The defensive tackle is a position where being 30 is not necessarily an impediment to getting a lucrative last contract. But we wanted to be back at 29 or 30. That was the thought of ours. Because we had higher average annual value in the 5-year range, but we sacrificed some of that to get to where we were, where we ended up in. Absolutely.
Paul Duracell, Jeffrey Simmons representation, appreciate you for joining us. Appreciate you for taking the time, and a go Jags to you and everybody else down there in the boot.
Yes, Oh, no, it was a pleasure anytime, and I enjoyed my talk with you guys.
Awesome. Thank
you. Appreciate it.
Paul Duracell, Jeffrey Simmons' agent. We'll react to that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
It's nothing to you. It's like, listen, we're going to sign this short-term deal. It's great for both parties, but knowing that Jeff is going to be back at the table in another 3 to 4 years.
Absolutely. And if you look at historically what the Titans have done, you know, as an agent, you got to do your homework. You know, if you look historically at what the Titans have done, they've done 5-year extensions. You know, Landry, the Taylor Lewan is the more appropriate comparison. You know, he had 5 for 80, but he did a 5-year extension with the 5th-year option. So we really, really wanted to get to a 4-year. You know, me personally, I wanted 3 years, but Rand told me, hell nah. Hey, look, I'm thinking I'm coming in. I'm like, you know, maybe I go 3 years, $68 million fully guaranteed, and with a basketball deal. Rand was like, hell nah. So, you know, the first couple of offers were 5-year extensions. I can, you know, y'all my cousins now, so I can tell y'all that. But I was adamant. And you look at Javon Hargrave, just got paid 4 years, $84 million at 30. Chris Jones is 29. The defensive tackle is a position where being 30 is not necessarily an impediment to getting a lucrative last contract. But we wanted to be back at 29 or 30. That was the thought of ours. Because we had higher average annual values in the 5-year range, but we sacrificed some of that to get to where we were, where we ended up in. Absolutely.
I wanted 3 years. Rand Carthon said, hell no.
Uh-uh.
Probably a good move from Rand Carthon. That was Paul Duracell, Jeffrey Simmons' agent, who was just on with us. And there was one thing in particular that was didn't surprise me, but it was good to hear. And that was Paul Duracell's experience with Rand Carthon. The negotiations, how they got to know each other, how everything unfolded, how it was a lot of mutual respect there. That doesn't surprise me in the slightest, because that's just, from my impression, what kind of guy Rand Carthon seems like. But if Paul Duracell didn't have a good experience with Rand Carthon, he probably could have just, you know, media talked his way through that response. But he genuinely seemed like he really respected Rand Carthon and enjoyed the negotiation process with Rand Carthon.
It you know, he said it when talking about Rand Carthon, it's like he's everybody's best friend. There's not a space that he can't walk into and sort of blend in and make friends and talk to people and is you know, personable with people and approachable. And that helps out a lot in negotiations, because now you feel you're building a relationship aside from the relationship with the contract. It's we're building a relationship in lieu of the contract. And the relationship will help, you know, us broker a deal for Jeffrey Simmons. And it seemed like that's what it did. You know, him seeing, you know, Rand at church at Mount Zion. And, you know, subsequently right after that, he takes him in and he shows him, hey, listen, this is the deal that we want to give, you know, Jeffrey Simmons. And ultimately, they worked that deal out. And it's probably the number that everybody wanted, more than likely. So, you know, building relationships is key in situations like this. And it seems like not only has he built a really good relationship with his client, Jeffrey Simmons, but he's built a really good relationship with Rand Carthon in that organization.
I just really enjoyed how the relationship not only with Rand Carthon was built, but also how he built it with Jeffrey Simmons. It seems very authentic. I'm sure Jeffrey Simmons at one point probably said, you know, do I really need an agent? You know, he obviously was going down this road without an agent for a while there, and he wasn't going to just take anybody. It had to be something that appeared to be a meaningful relationship, and I you could just feel it there, the way they talked about how it was built. That's just a great story. I just enjoyed hearing him talk about the process there.
Yeah, and that's what I really wanted to get an inside look into, is how did the process go down? Because it was a deal that came together rather quickly. I know it felt long in the process because Titans fans were on the edge of their seat just waiting for the deal to get done. And I know they were antsy and impatient just because they wanted Jeffrey Simmons to be locked down. But it was a deal that came together pretty quickly. It was a deal that came together earlier than was really necessary, but good to just go ahead and get it done. And for Rand Carthon to be able to go into the draft knowing, okay, priority 1A on my list is already taken care of. I think another thing, too, for me was that Jeffrey Simmons, his priority was guarantees. And that also doesn't surprise me. I would say that probably a majority of athletes going into contract negotiations, that is their number one priority, is guaranteed money. And going back to that Athletic article a few months ago when John Robinson said, you know, we want to pay you. We don't know how we're going to be able to pay you. Very weird and cryptic negotiating tactic from John Robinson. So what was his number one priority is getting paid, getting that guaranteed money, when that was kind of up in the air with John Robinson, at least as far as we were concerned from the Athletic article, now getting that guaranteed money locked down and also locked down for 4 years. It seemed like the top priority for Jeffrey Simmons was taken care of.
Yeah, and it sounded like right from the start it was about let's do this. It's not about me, the agent. It's about Jeffrey, the client. Let's get him the most guaranteed money. And it, you heard it at the end there. The strategy, as you said, Derek, you said this yesterday before we ever talked to Paul, was there's another payday down the road.
Exactly,
if you have confidence and you, quote, bet on yourself just a little bit, you know, whatever he didn't get in the AAV or whatever, he'll be – and it was funny, you heard him talk about he tried to get the three-year deal so you get back to that window quicker. But – after 4 years, you still feel like he'll still be a very, very good player, God willing, all of that stuff. If he stay, I mean, he's going to work hard. The Titans will be glad to invest in him again, mm-hmm. It looks like. So that's really the idea. You get the two paydays. Mm-hmm. Not very many players can do that, but the great ones can.
Yeah, and I think more players. It's easier. It's harder for a quarterback to do like a 3-4 year deal, especially franchise quarterbacks, because they tend to want to lock you up for a little bit longer. They tend to want to lock you up 6-7 years, 5-7 years. You look at Patrick Mahomes, 10-year deal, a lot of money, but we know they're going to have to go back to the table to redo that deal eventually to kick some money down the road. So with the quarterback, I believe it's a little bit harder to do those short-term deals. But I think with everybody outside of a quarterback, this is what they should be looking to do. Every player across the league that's not a quarterback, and you believe and your talent has shown on the field, and it warrants you getting a big contract, you need to do a short-term contract. Make sure you get a lot of money, guaranteed, short-term contract, so you're still young enough to go back to the table, if indeed you believe in your ability to get better. Jeff and Paul believe that Jeffrey will get better. So going back to the table isn't – it's like we know we're going to do that. That's coming. So we're signing – I want a 3-year deal, but Rand said no. All right, give me a 4-year deal. We can go back to the table in 4 years. Jeffrey, 30 years old. He may be defensive player of the year by that time. So that adds more dollars to the contract moving forward.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Ask D. Mace is coming up next. Anything is on the table. Get your questions in for D. Mace. Text, calls, all of the above. And the best question for D. Mace will win a nice little prize, which we will reveal coming up next. Caroline Willie, D. Mace. And hey, Preds fans, you can hang out tonight before the Preds game at the Superbook Lounge and Landshark Bar and Grill, Margaritaville on Broadway with 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Place your bets with Superbook and enjoy great food and drink specials. Plus, enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
G-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
Quick throw. Touchdown, Derek Mason.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards.
Midfield, and there he goes. 80 yards for the touchdown.
And now you can ask him anything. Question about football or life? Now is your time to ask D. Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now on Caroline, Willie, and
D. Mace.
On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app.
Yes, D-Mays. Get those questions in for D-Mays. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. And the best question for D-Mays will win a pair of tickets to see Godsmack at First Bank Amphitheater on May 23rd. So get those questions in for D-Mays. If you're ready.
Hey, let's go.
To the phones. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Doug is on the line with a question for D-Mays. What's up, Doug?
Hey, fellas. Good to hear from you. I've got a question for D-Mays. We've all seen the customary game ball given post-game after a good win, going to the player that probably played the most significant part in a win. But my question to you, D-Mays, have you ever called a dude out and said, hey, bro, you're the reason why we lost? And part B, with Big Jim being a significant person now that's a leader in this team, if you've ever done that, what is your advice to him on how he's going to have to do it? Because it's got to be done. Blaine did it. You've done it. Eddie's done it. Hey, congratulations, Mr. Jeff, you're it. So my question, have you ever done it, D-Mate? And how do you do it?
Thanks for the question, Doug. Appreciate it. That's you got to know the particular player you may have to say that to. You got to know who that player is. You got to know his personality. You know, how does he take, you know, constructive criticism, you know, in a way that, okay, I hear you, I understand you, okay, now let me go do something about it. Some guys, you say something to, they automatically get defensive. And, you know, they, well, no, you worry about your job, not my job. And it's not about that. It's worrying about the team and making the team better. To call someone out in front of everybody, a particular person, no, but we have had team only meetings where, you know, as one of the leaders, you get up there and you explain, hey, we need to, this is what needs to happen. And they know exactly who you're talking to when you say that. You don't have to necessarily point a guy out. Now, I had no problem in the receiver room, hey, telling a guy, hey, listen, you need to play better. That's just, it's just flat out. That's the way it is. Mm-hmm. They expect more of you. I expect more of you. You need to play better because I know those guys in that room.
Right.
We've spent all of our time together. So I can say that to him, and he knows that it's coming from a place of love and wanting him to get better, you know, as a player or as a person.
Very fair.
Yeah.
On to the next question for D. Mace. Daryl is on the line. What's up, Daryl?
Hey, guys.
Hey.
D-Mace, I've got a question about logistics for when they bring these top 30 players in. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the ins and outs. Will they fly them first class? Do they bring them in on private on the Titans' private plane? Will they put them, like, at the, you know, one of the top hotels in Nashville? Do they take them to, the like, at the top of the Marriott and all that kind of stuff? How do they work out the logistics for these guys who are coming in? Are they doing their best to impress them, or do they put him up at Vrabel's house so he can make them scramble and eggs in the morning?
If I'm a head coach, I'm bringing him to my house so you can scramble me some eggs in the morning and cook me some pancakes. But, no, I think it depends on, you know, because, you know, for me, being a fourth-round draft pick, you know, they didn't wine and dine me. I think I went on two trips, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, and that was it. And it was, you know, they fly you in. It's, you know, fly you in first class, but that's really, you fly in and you do all the meetings and they take you out to dinner or lunch, and then you're out of there, unless they want you to do some type of workout or whatnot. But, you know, typically guys that they're bringing in now, say a Will Levis, Hendon Hooker, which doesn't count against their visits, I don't think, because he's in-state.
In-state doesn't count, yeah.
Or Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud, Will Anderson, guys like that that are projected, you know, all with the exception of Will Levis, that are projected potentially top five picks, then, yeah, some you may bring in on a private jet, some you may bring in first class, and you wine and dine them because you want to show them, you know, what the organization about. And they want to find out what you're about as a player. Mm-hmm. But then once you get drafted by, then you fly in on that. If you have first round pick, they fly you on that private jet. You get off, you meet everybody, and away we go. But they, just like you as a player, they try to put their best foot forward as an organization. They want to show you what it's like and what it could potentially be like once you get here. And as a player, you want to make sure you put your best foot forward, that you answer the questions honestly, that you make sure you know once they put you on that board and tell you to start dissecting things and drawing up defenses or offenses that you're able and capable of doing that. And just, you know, just being yourself, being personal, but being yourself. That's all they're worried about because they're trying to find out as much as they can about you face-to-face because they've done their due diligence behind closed doors, figuring out everything. But now they want to put the person that they found out this stuff about in front of them and talk to them in their setting, not necessarily his setting.
And it's, I think of it just as much as the teams vetting the players, mm-hmm. as much as it is the players getting a vibe for the organization,
exactly.
too. The GM, the coach, just kind of the organization as a whole. Is that how you kind of approached it?
Yeah, because, and again, mine was different. You know, I was a fourth-round draft pick, so I wasn't, you know, taking trips all willy-nilly to different
right.
teams. Again, I only went to two teams. But, you know, my free agency was a little bit different because I went to, you know, these places and, you know, it's like, okay, I can see myself here or nah, I want to be here. This is a step back from what I came from. So it's more so from a, because you have no control when you're drafted. You have no control. They're drafting you. But in free agency, you do have control over where you're going. So that more so, what you just asked, Caroline, that's more so in free agency. Where you get to fill out.
When you can pick and choose.
Exactly. You get to fill out the organization. I'm like, hey, is this where I really want to be? You know, so.
More into your questions for D-Mace coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game.
D-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
Quick throw. Touchdown, Derek Mason.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards. And now you can ask him anything. Have a question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now on Caroline, Willie, and
D-Mace.
On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app.
Ask D-Mace. The best question for D-Mace will win a pair of tickets to see Godsmack at First Bank Amphitheater on May 23rd. Let's get into it. Adam is on the line with a question for D-Mace. What's up, Adam?
Hey, D-Mace. So when you joined the league, you had a couple of years there before we went to the Super Bowl, mainly a special teams guy, like you made your bones in special teams. Depth chart, I know Isaac Byrd was a player that a lot of people forget, but he had a good year that year. Dice, Big Ten both had decent years. And then the following season, we signed Carl Pickens, but that was the year that you hit the all-purpose mark. And I was curious if there's anybody that you see on the current roster. And if not, it's okay. Mm-hmm. But the way it's constructed, if there's anybody that could come and maybe a same path, like make their bones in special teams and eventually earn a spot and, you know, show out.
Oh, man. Thank you for the call. It's hard to say with this crop of guys because there's not too many guys that I look at from a – Kyle Phillips is a name that comes to mind because, you know, he doubles as the slot receiver as well as their punt returner. But beside him, I don't think there's one guy that sort of excelled at special teams and then plays either offense or defense that just needs the opportunity to excel on offense. Kyle Phillips may be that guy. Will he be a starter, an outside guy? Probably not, but I think, you know, if he stays healthy, his role will increase if, you know, he starts off the way he started off last year, and he ran into injuries very quickly. But I can see Kyle Phillips being a guy that not only will give you production from a punt return standpoint, but also can be a productive receiver in his offense from the slot position. But I don't see anyone You know, because Treylon doesn't play special teams. Racy McMath, he plays a little special teams, I believe. If he was more of a, you know, a returner, I can see Racy McMath being a guy because he has the tools, the height, speed, everything to be an outside receiver that the Titans need. So he could be a guy, minus the heavy special teams load, he could be a guy that can increase his productivity in this year's upcoming season for the Tennessee Titans, because right now they need someone to sort of step up. We believe that, you know, Treylon Burks will, at least I believe Treylon Burks will be the guy they thought he was when they drafted him, but they need somebody outside of Treylon Burks to be able to go out and be highly productive from the receiver standpoint. So to me, it's Kyle Phillips or Racy McMath.
That's kind of how I feel about both Racy McMath and Kyle Phillips. If you can get a productive season out of them, mm-hmm. then great. But it's not guys that I can rely on or say, okay, we have Kyle Phillips and Racy McMath, so we're good. But it's just net positive if you can get something out of them. Devin is on the line with a question for D-Mace. What's up, Devin?
Hey, guys. Quick question. D-Mace.
Uh-huh.
Give me your all-time Mount Rushmore of coaches that you've associated with, either played for, against, or your kids played for. Give me a Mount Rushmore of coaches.
Mount Rushmore season.
Mount Rushmore played for or against. I'm going to say first one is Robert Lynch, coach at Mumford High School, because he's the one that finally, beside my brothers, he's the one that finally convinced me to play football. He would always come up to me because I was a basketball player. And it's not like I was great at basketball, but I love basketball. I grew up watching it. And he would come every day and say, boy, you need to put that basketball down and come and play for me. Every day he would see me in the gym room until finally he got me to do that. And obviously the rest is history. So him, number one. And now my Mount Rushmore is for personal reasons, not necessarily – you know, coaches that are great, because Bill Belichick would be number one.
Of course, of course.
You know, if that was the case. But then, two, George Perlis. He's a guy that he and Charlie Baggett and, you know, some other coaches, they helped recruit me to Michigan State. They saw the talent. They wanted me to come to Michigan State, and they gave me a scholarship. So George Perlis would be on that list. Nick Saban. Because he came in after my second year, and we're only talking about head coaches,
right?
So Nick Saban would be on that list as well.
I think he's on everyone's Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I think he's on everybody's list.
But personally, for
exactly.
you, it makes
personally
it that much
for
more special.
Me, Jeff Fisher would be on that list, obviously, because he drafted me. He and Floyd, so he would be on that list. And then, you know, It would be John Harbaugh, because as much as I like Billick, who, you know, I went there as a free agent, I think it was more so because of Ozzie and that relationship, you know, my agent and Ozzie had, and then me looking at their roster, hell of a defense, and I wanted to be a part of a team that, because that's what I was used to, mm-hmm. a team with a great defense, you know, whatnot. So I wanted to make sure that I went to a team that had a great defense and a young quarterback, and they did, had a young quarterback. And Kyle Bowler, it didn't work out for Kyle, but he was young, and I felt I could help him. But John, I built a relationship with John Harbaugh. And even to this day, you know, I texted him yesterday about the signing for OBJ, and he texted me back. So John would be on that list too, because – but with all of those coaches that I talked about, they all found a way to get the maximum ability out of me. Mm-hmm. I knew what I can do as a player. I was self-motivated as a player. But those guys found their own little way at trying to, you know, get that extra out of me. And like you said, I mean, hell, Nick Saban is on the top of everybody just about. So that's a no-brainer. But those coaches right there, they mean – it's not that they are the greatest coaches in football. Nick may be one of them. But they are coaches that I, from a personal standpoint,
yeah.
this is my personal Mount Rushmore. but these guys all had a hand at either getting me started, i.e. Robert Lynch, and, you know, helping me continue my career after leaving here, a la John Harbaugh. So,
did you tell Harbaugh what in the world were you doing paying Odell Beckham Jr. $15
million? No, I didn't say that.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I just said, hey, congratulations on the signing of OBJ.
As you
like,
should.
Oh, thank you, Mace. I appreciate it. So, you know.
Wes texts in with a question. Says, what is the one most important piece of advice that you would give these draft prospects that are about to make generational money?
Oh, man, get you a good financial advisor. Get you some people that you trust. Keep your circle small. You don't need a large circle. You don't need a bunch of people hanging on. You don't owe anyone anything. You may want to give them something. You don't owe anyone anything. And that's even, you know, and I know it's hard for people to believe this. You don't owe your parents anything. That's like me telling my son and my daughter, like, listen, I raised y'all. Your mom and I raised y'all for the last 18, 19 years. When y'all make it, oh, y'all owe me this. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to do that. We were your parents. You know, these are the things we were. If you choose to do that, that's great. Mm-hmm. But you're not obligated to do that. I had to learn that, you know, when I played. I'm not obligated. I will do things because I love you, but I'm not obligated to do them. So don't ever make me feel that way. So I would tell guys that are about to sign these huge contracts, whether you're a rookie, or it may not be a huge contract. It may be a mid-level contract, fourth, fifth, sixth rounder, that you are obligated to no one but your kids, and if you're married, your wife. Mm-hmm. But anybody else outside of that, you're not obligated to them. You may want to help them, and that's great. Help them. But don't ever make them feel like you're obligated to do things for them financially that you don't have to do. Keep your circle small. You don't need a bunch of people hanging on and this and that and that and this.
Leeches.
Exactly. They may say you have changed because you got the money. And it's like, no, I haven't changed. But we are on two different roads here. Mm-hmm. I'm still cool with you. You're still my boy. But I got to, you know, this. I'm not going to play this game forever. And I got to save my money. I can't just be writing checks out to you and you,
right,
for every little thing. I just always tell people like, listen, don't call me, you know, 2 months or 3 months after your rent is due. You knew you couldn't pay your rent the first month, so call me then if you want me to help you. Don't wait 3 months later where it's all backed up and you're about to get kicked out. Mm-hmm. Like, why couldn't you call me when it happened, like when it first happened, when you knew you couldn't pay the first? That's with anything.
Right.
So don't feel obligated to help people. You help them because you love them. But don't feel obligated. Only people you are obligated to, if you have little ones, you're obligated to them because they didn't ask to come into this world.
Right.
And you're obligated to your wife because you married her, you know. But everybody else, you're doing it because you want to, not because you have to.
Good stuff.
That's good advice.
One last quick one, a fun one here from Troy. Since you're a big hoops fan, uh-huh, Derek, you like to play hoops. You just told your story about in high school. Give me an NBA player you would have loved to play with. Who would be maybe your favorite guy to play with?
Man.
Past or present.
Like play basketball with?
Play basketball with, yeah.
Oh, man. Gosh. Obviously, I mean, Michael Jordan would be number one. But besides
you're
Michael
saying that as a Lakers fan? I can't believe that.
Yeah, I know,
that.
But beside that, it's like Magic Johnson. Just like, I want to be, what you call it on, what was it called? Snatch with the comedian. What's his name? When he envisioned himself playing with the Lakers back in the day. What was the name of the show? God.
Not Arsenio Hall.
No, he was a comedian. But he envisioned himself, and this was back in the 80s when this movie came out. And he fell asleep and had this dream. He had this big afro. It was a white guy with a big afro. And he was playing with Magic and all those.
Oh, Fletch.
Yeah, Fletch. Yes, Fletch. So, if I could have played with the whole Laker team, it was like, that would have been great back then.
Oh, man. Imagine just playing with Magic Johnson. You know, if you get open, he's going to get you the ball.
Absolutely.
That's the kind of guy you would love to
absolutely
play with.
Absolutely.
Like, I expected Mike. You to say that, uh-huh, D-Mace. When you said Michael Jordan, I said,
no,
minute,
but I'm saying, you think Michael's like, okay, everybody thinks Michael. Yeah. But it's like, Magic is like, you know, because to me, Magic and Kobe are, when you talk about favorite players for me, Magic and Kobe.
Your Mount Rushmore of Lakers.
Yeah, my Mount Rushmore, Lakers. Uh-huh. Magic, Kobe, Kareem.
Fletch.
James Worthy, Fletch.
Fletch was a great player.
Exactly.
At least in his dream.
And then Shaq. Yeah. You know, Shaq is up there. LeBron's not up there yet, even though he won a championship in the bubble. He ain't been there long enough.
He's going to work his way up that Rushmore.
Yeah, exactly.
LeBron hasn't done enough. He's got to do it just a little bit more.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. As D-Maze, the best question for D-Maze. Will win two tickets to go see Godsmack. Appreciate all the questions for D-Maze. But coming up next, we asked Elliot Friedman a bunch of questions that we have about Barry Trotz. We all have questions about what this Predators team is going to look like next year, and those can't be answered without the perspective of Barry Trotz. But we got that yesterday. He sat down with Jared yesterday and answered some of the questions that we have. So we will get into that coming up next. And, of course, your thoughts as well, 615-737-1025. Caroline, Willie, D-Maze, we're out here at Pete and Terry's Tavern for the last time this season ahead of the Predators season finale against the Colorado Avalanche. Caroline, Willie, D-Maze, 1025-1063, the game.